Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Coming from California, here's Aaron Alvarado and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. This is a special episode for a lot of reasons. One is because I'm joined by my co-host, as always. Not from Los Angeles, California, however. He is joining me from Rockland, California, in my own living room.
Yes.
Mr. Aaron Alvarado. Aaron, how are you doing?
It's good to be here. I'm doing great. Let's talk about your living room. It's palatial.
Is it?
Yeah. It's spacious. And anyone who can hear the echo, the reverb, it's because we're in a cavernous area right now. I don't want to show it off too much. You know, David, you're modest.
Well.
You're a modest individual. I, however, can be proud for you. This place is awesome. This house is great. And it makes for a good podcasting studio.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, just to be clear, very small house. Not cavernous. 1,400 square feet. Though, I'm not complaining. It uses every bit of that 1,400 square feet in great ways. And we are in the, I think people call it the great room, which is the combination of a living room and the kitchen. And
it feels great.
We're sitting across the table from each other. And Coco's whining already because she wants to be on the podcast.
I don't blame her.
Yeah. So
I mean, if we could put her on the video right now, we'd get at least another 1,000 extra views. Oh,
imagine if dogs could talk. I think Coco would have a lot to say.
Yeah.
But this is also significant because we're talking Robert Redford. Today is Robert Redford's birthday.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
No, it's not.
Mm-mm.
No, it's not.
It's not at all.
Not his birthday.
No.
It is, however, Leonardo DiCaprio's birthday. That's
it
a true
is.
Story.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing actually another pod later tonight after the Cowboys game, where we're actually going to be doing a Leonardo DiCaprio pod, a top five, or a five of his best films. We're going to go through his whole career.
Yeah.
And then we're also, we're going to go over, he's not the only person with a birthday today. Mr. Aaron Alvarado also has a birthday. So later on in the next the pod this evening, we will be going over the top five Aaron Alvarado films as well.
Yeah.
Which I'm excited. I played a part in a couple of them. I can't wait to.
And by films, you mean top five Instagram movies that I've recorded.
There are some Instagram stories that are in the list.
That's right.
But I don't want to. Yeah, no spoilers.
No spoilers. We'll get to it. We'll get to the extensive list.
I'm actually excited to go over that. But no, we are here to talk about Robert Redford, who released his last film upon this kind of surprising announcement that he's retiring from acting. Not surprising because he's like 80, late 80s.
Oh, yeah.
What? Yeah, it's in his, he's like 80.
He's at least 80 years old.
No, he's like 85? It's like really old. And we're both Googling this because
I'm not Googling. No? He's born in 36. So.
Oh, 1936. He's 82. Yeah. So
he sure is.
He's born August 8. He just turned, back in August, 82 years old.
Did you send him a gift? You should have sent him a present.
Oh, I did.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I sent him a VHS copy of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
He's never seen that.
No, never. Yeah.
I know you've spent a lot of time in what's the city where they host the
Park City.
Park City. There
yeah,
you go. You've
yeah.
spent a lot of time in Park City. You ever see him around town?
I've actually met him.
I mean, not during the
not during Sundance
the festival.
No, yeah. I don't think he spends as much time on his property, his ranch, in Utah, when it's not during the Sundance Film Festival season. So,
I've
only
seen him in person though.
Well, the first time I ever saw him in person, I kid you not.
You would never kid me. So,
well,
you don't even need to say that.
I barely kid ever about anything, but this is a true story. The first time I saw him in person, you know, he was about 5 feet in front of me, sitting down in the front row of one of the theaters that they were screening a film.
Right.
And he was on both sides. He was sitting between two people who were also of note. On his left side, he was sitting next to Ethel Kennedy, who
was
the widow of Robert F. Kennedy, who ran for president, was brother of a president who was famously assassinated, both of them famously assassinated. Mm-hmm. So his widow, Ethel, an icon, sitting on one side, and I knew it was Ethel Kennedy because the movie was a documentary about Ethel.
Right.
And then on his right side was Taylor Swift.
Wow.
Yes, who apparently is very close with the Kennedy family and was there for the documentary premiere. And I didn't really know. It was a cognitive dissonance a little bit.
Yeah.
Walking in, I was like, that's Robert Redford and Ethel Kennedy and that's Taylor Swift. Like, it was like one of those bizarre, like, these three people sitting next to
What year was that, by the way?
That was 2012, maybe 11. Okay.
So do you think that was the very first meeting of them where they planted the political seeds that Taylor Swift said, and which are now bearing fruit? You know, she got very political this year.
That's right. That's correct. Oh, no, there's no doubt in my mind that she was there, not just for that premiere.
Yeah.
They got her in a room and they said, look, there's going to be a time, not in the distant future, in the near future, 2018, where we're going to need you to intervene into Tennessee state politics.
We need it.
We need it from you. We need you to be kind of a... the analogy would be a surfer on a big blue wave.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well,
she's going to lead that. Mm-hmm. She's going to lead that
Blue
wave.
That's right.
She tried her best.
You know, she had a huge impact. I kept reading about in the news headlines leading up. The polls, everything turned around the second that she revealed her support for the Democratic candidates. And it was a... You know, it was game changing, and then there was Election Day, which apparently is that counts more than the polls before. Like the actual votes count more, I've been told. And I don't remember what happened. She didn't get what.
I don't think that she got her. I don't think her candidate that she was specifically supporting was elected. And then I think she went back and scrubbed her social media of all references to politics.
She sure did.
So now she's back to being a centrist.
Conscientious
objector.
That's right.
In the political forum.
The Hacksaw Ridge of our time. Yes. She's a modern day Andrew Garfield.
She sure is.
Wow. So anyway, I didn't
really like seeing T Swift in real life. Was that more stunning than actually seeing Robert Redford? And
I hate to admit this. But it was the thing that took me back. Like it took me out of. I was like, I can't believe what's going on here. Right. You know, like I was kind of stunned. I don't want to say starstruck.
Right.
But I expect, you know, you expect Robert Redford in that setting, not necessarily to see him that up close. Because I was walking to my seat. You know, they're trying to usher me along. They're trying not to get people to stop and greet them. You know,
don't make eye contact.
Not with Bob. Bob doesn't like eye contact.
It's like an eclipse. You can't look directly in it.
No, well, talking about an eclipse, Ethel Kennedy, Bob Kennedy, or Bob Redford, and and T Swift. So it was crazy. I was like so shook up. The rest of the evening, I was just trying to shake it off because I couldn't even believe what I saw. Anyway, Robert Redford, it was stunning to see. Ethel Kennedy, but Taylor Swift, admittedly, I've seen more of her more recently in terms of just like on magazines and on TV and music videos on whatever. And so she feels more like a bigger celebrity right now, just because of, you know,
the moment.
Relevancy. Exactly. So it did feel a little more like, whoa, that person's not supposed to be in this room.
Right. And she's 7 feet tall, which is...
Yeah.
Apparently,
I mean, it's like an NBA player walk. Yes, it was crazy. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, she could slam dunk a basketball.
Well, she should be one of the bigs for the Kings.
We have a glut in the front court, so that's okay. we did go to a Kings game last night.
We certainly did.
Your Lakers were in town.
Yeah.
And we went easy on you for your birthday.
I appreciate that.
So you could walk out with a W.
The Kings only showed up for two quarters of that game.
Nah, that's generous.
So, I saw more life out of Too Short during the halftime performance.
Oh, my gosh.
Than I did out of the Kings.
Oh, and Too Short. Roster. Oh, boy. he recited maybe two or three lines of lyrics.
Yeah.
And then the remaining part of the time, he just said he has nothing but love for Sacramento.
And he does. The man loves his Sacramento.
How can he not?
A
Sacramento covered in smoke, by the way, right now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Engulfed.
The fires going on in Paradise and around the Chico area have completely consumed downtown and the greater Sacramento area.
Yeah.
It was...
It's ominous out there.
Smoky.
Yeah.
And he was even in the arena. I mean, LeBron James... I mean, there were headlines. He said he could... You know, he had headaches because of the smoke.
Yeah, there's a lot of smoke everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's really disconcerting. Like, it almost looked like an ominous fog, but it's smoke. It's everywhere. It's hanging on everything, and it smells like really bad.
Yeah, it smells really bad.
Worse than Sacramento normally smells.
Yeah,
it's amazing to me. That was what really threw me about coming up here. but I gotta hand it to you. Your new arena is really cool.
Thanks.
I am very impressed, and you guys did a good job.
It would be better.
Shout out to Kevin Johnson.
Okay.
Yeah.
There is still a big quote in the arena, in the foyer, that says, "Let's do the Sacramento," quote, Mayor Kevin Johnson.
Yeah.
It's not aged well.
What was he saying? What, like, when he says, "Let's do this," what is he talking about? Can we explore that?
Yes, sure. Let's do that. I'd like to believe he means let's keep the team in the city and not let it go to Seattle. But you know what? With hindsight, we don't know actually.
He's famous for doing some stuff that we can't talk about.
Yeah. His mantra of "Let's do this" got him doing some very bad things. So anyway,
he lives his life by that motto. Let's do this.
Gosh, we really should take that down.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, there is a story there. We were going to retire a jersey, a Kevin Johnson Kings jersey. He never played for the Kings, right? He famously played for the Suns. He was an all-star, you know, a really great point guard. You know, had a storied career.
How did he come to be Sacramento mayor?
Well, he's a hometown. He grew up in Sacramento. Okay. So born and raised. Okay. Yeah. He's a hometown boy who came back after he retired and got into local politics and wanted to, you know, be the kid who from the streets of Sacramento to the mayor's office. Yeah. And so it really was a great story. And he was instrumental in keeping the Kings here. There's just no doubt about that. But he also did some heinous things in the early part of his NBA career, about 15 years. Or no, sorry. How many years ago? 16 years ago.
Right.
It was it's terrible. And so anyway, there was this scheduled. It was before one of the games, the first season in the new arena. So this was two seasons ago. And they were going to retire a Kings jersey to Mayor Kevin Johnson. Right. And they scrapped it about 12 hours before.
Oh, boy.
And Kevin Johnson was irate.
Oh, boy.
And they instead of doing that, they did this quote in the foyer instead. Which is interesting that they felt the need to have an alternative to make him feel better. Because the reason why they wanted to scrap in the first place is a pretty good reason not to do anything at all.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
But whatever.
Wow.
That would have been... Do you know how bad that would have looked if that went through and... Like awful. The video, the clips that would live forever on YouTube of that, and then like of course it'd be up in the rafters. Once you put something in the rafters, there's no taking it down.
You can't ever take it down.
Yeah.
So in the Staples Center, we have we retired Taylor Swift's name up there.
Stop.
Sorry.
No, you're not.
And the amount she's had the most sellouts in Staples Center history.
Okay.
For artists, musical acts.
Wait, sellouts as in, like, she wrote songs that...
Yeah.
She betrayed her.
Basically, yes. Yeah. No, I meant she sold out the Republican base of her fans.
All the conservative people that love her.
Yeah, I know. So she has her name retired up in the rafters of Staples Center.
Wow.
So. Wow. Yeah, there's a connection there as well.
Okay.
No, but the Golden 1 Arena, it's 2 years old, right? This is the second year it's in operation.
Right. Yeah.
It still feels brand new. Everything about it is just really interesting, and it feels distinctly Sacramento.
It does.
You guys did a real good job.
Thank you. Appreciate that. It would be bad if they built this brand new arena, spent all this money, all this time, this big hubbub, and it like turned out to be pretty crappy.
Or just generic.
Or generic.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't feel generic. It feels like a part of the city. As someone who's an outsider, but who's lived in Sacramento for a number of years.
Right.
Yeah.
So we are going to get to Robert Redford. I talked about potentially discussing this podcast. Or sorry, not podcast. He was just calling me as well.
Okay, sorry.
A friend is calling both of us. And we're in the middle of recording a pod, and we're just not going to answer.
Yeah.
So if you're out there, Logan, pay attention to the pod.
He should be watching right now.
Should be watching. Yeah. Clearly he's not, because he's calling both of us.
Yeah.
And so I'm writing right now to him. Aaron and I are recording a pod. This is so unprofessional.
It's all right. The Chinese are okay with this. They want our podcast to feel real.
Yes, they do. They said authenticity above all else. And
that's why they loved the movie Venom.
Oh, loved it.
Yeah.
See this?
I just saw the headline. The movie Venom opened in China this past weekend. Made $111 million.
Incredible.
Over the weekend in China.
Yes.
I don't understand. I mean, I enjoyed the movie. I had a good time there. But I would never think that it would be such a big hit for the Chinese market. It's huge.
They love Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
They love Tom Hardy.
Well, I do.
Well, not as much as the Chinese.
They love Riz Ahmed.
Oh, too. Big Riz fan. Yeah, Riz heads. Yeah. Huge. I don't understand the Chinese box office at all. The Star Wars movies get released over there. Even ones like Rogue One, who have Chinese superstar, actor, celebrity superstars in the film.
Right.
And it doesn't do well. Star Wars films don't do well. You release Venom with Tom Hardy, and it breaks records with $111 million opening weekend.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I have no idea how this works.
Yeah, I mean, typically they do love American blockbusters there. I don't know, culturally, if they have a connection to the character Venom, but they love him and they're going to get a ton more. So I don't see how this movie only, I don't even think it cost $60 million to make. I think it was.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was either $60 or $75 million to make.
Whoa.
It was not.
For a Marvel movie. They didn't
have a huge, well, technically not a Marvel movie, but yes, loosely a Marvel movie. They made it on a budget, a strict budget, and it's just a gigantic, monstrous hit. So, good on them.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get a ton more, and we're going to get a lot more bad accents from Tom Hardy.
Oh, just the terrific accent work. We're going to get... you know what? Tom, if you're listening, which we've been told by his people, yeah. Sometimes he tunes into the pod. If you're listening... We're okay if you want to change it, the accent for each subsequent Venom mm-hmm. sequel. Just change it up. Do a South African accent.
I think
do
it's better.
Irish.
Yes.
Give every accent. A yeah. Rhodesian accent. Mm-hmm. I'm here for all of them. Mm-hmm. We love your accent work.
I don't want British, though.
Oh, because...
I don't care for a British accent from Tom Hardy. Because it feels fake.
What was the Bane accent? Austrian? I want that one again.
Yeah.
Your punishment must be more severe. Yeah, that was my best Bane impression I'm going to get.
Actually, I think that's like 1930s announcer voice he was
It
doing.
Might be. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, in the left corner, we have the heavyweight champion of the world. I don't know if you could even hear
that's
that.
Bane. That was absolutely Bane.
That was Bane. Yeah. Right, it's spot on.
So just when we were walking to the game or in the game, I noticed so many people had like... masks. Did you notice that? Like a lot of people were wearing...
because of the smoke?
Yeah, because of the smoke. And yeah. I just thought of Bane just all night long. Mm. I was thinking Bane. Everyone's doing Bane voice.
Mm. So speaking of our Chinese sponsors, those masks are brought to you by Chinese pollution.
Yes.
Beijing.
Yeah.
That's a very popular look in Beijing. talk about smoke in Sacramento, the pollution in Beijing. It's like that year round.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've heard that... I don't know if it's true or not, but apparently the pollution in Salt Lake City is equivalent to Beijing.
Yeah. So fake news is the way I describe that. It's called the inversion. Look, it's a few months of the year and it's not even that big of a deal. Sure. You can't see the sun for, you know, a couple of months.
Right.
No big deal.
You don't need to.
You have flashlights in this and your cars have headlights. You
know, right.
Sun. Anyway, it is pretty bad in Utah. The way the mountains or something. I don't know. It traps a bunch of stuff. Who knows? I don't know.
Science. I don't believe in this stuff.
But I can tell you what, it's not worse than Beijing. I know that much. It's not worse than Beijing. Both places, by the way, have hosted the Olympics.
One of them didn't deserve it. I won't say which one didn't deserve it.
One of them did have some controversy leading into it. They may have purchased the ability to host the Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
One of them or both?
Definitely both.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So I'm actually going to... Let's table the homecoming chat for now.
Sure.
There's this new Amazon Prime TV show starring Julia Roberts that I really want to talk about. We're going to save that for later pod because we just got to get into this Robert Redford stuff. Robert Redford made his last movie and it's released and this is it. Now we have a full Robert Redford filmography.
Yes.
He's done everything he's wanted to do. He said everything he wanted to say. Very few actors get to go out on their own terms and in the way they want to go. Now, he has absolutely been able to control his destiny.
Yeah.
And this film, which is based on true events, mostly, is a film that he had optioned the rights to years ago and has been waiting for the right time to make it. And I'm guessing that he was waiting for it to be his swan song.
Yeah.
Now, the significance of this isn't just that it's Robert Redford's last film, but it's directed by friend of the pod, yes. David Lowery, who we've had on. As a guest, right. Skyler had him on to talk during the press junket of A Ghost Story.
Yes.
Okay? Now, I don't want to say too much. I don't want to make any promises, but he may be coming back on the pod to talk a little bit more about Old Man and the Gun.
Oh, yeah.
Which is this film that we're talking about right now. So we're going to do the review right now, but later on we might be able to do a follow-up episode of the man himself.
Hopefully we get a part two of the pod and we get all the deepest, darkest secrets. Because
absolutely.
We know... Some stuff was going on.
Well, there were a lot of rumors about some things going on behind the scenes. I think I don't want to say too much again, but...
You can get it confirmed right from the horse's mouth.
The set was described in one of the words used was hostile. just kidding. We are kidding.
No way. of all the people to direct a movie and to star with, I don't see there being a conflict between Robert Redford and David Lowery.
No.
Again, I don't know the guy, but just from every interview I've heard... from talking to people that know him directly.
Yes.
He seems like a very affable guy and someone that's very accommodating too.
So yeah, David Lowery. And for those listening that haven't, you know, heard us talk about David Lowery in the past or heard our episode where Skyler interviews him, he is the director of a couple of indie films that you probably haven't heard of called Anthem Body Saints and A Ghost Story. But he also did Pete's Dragon, which is the Disney film that's incredibly underrated. For some reason, Disney chose not to run any advertisements in the lead up to it. But if you haven't seen it, go see it. It's really something. It also has Robert Redford. Now, Robert Redford saw David Lowery's first film at Sundance called Anthem Body Saints. Oh, yeah. I was actually there with Skyler at the premiere. But Robert Redford saw that movie, and that's what made him think Lowery would be the perfect person to direct this movie, Old Man and the Gun. And so he approached him then and basically got him signed on to do it. And they kind of sat on it for a little while, and Lowery made a couple more movies, and then he finally came around to making this. Now, to give people a background of what the story is about, again, a true story about a man named Forrest Tucker, who was
Sounds like the most made-up name.
Absolutely,
ever, by the way.
If we wrote that in a script, there's no way that'd say no, changed. No. That's not. That doesn't sound like a real name. It sounds way too made up. You wrote names on a bunch of words on a board and just picked two. But yeah, apparently that was his real name. But who knows? This guy was a little bit of a fraudster, a little bit of a scam artist kind of mess.
Definitely a scam artist.
But a bank robber, almost a lifelong bank robber. Yeah. So this is the guy who robbed countless banks and allegedly broke out of prison 16 times.
They said 16, yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And so this movie is actually about the end of this bank robber's life. He is in his 70s?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, late 60s, 70s, something around there. I don't know. And he was still kind of scratching that itch to rob banks at that age, and he was doing so successfully. And so this film tells that story of him as well as his two good friends who are also senior citizens, and they're called the Over the Hill Gang.
Yeah.
And the crux of it is he's being chased by a police detective, Dallas police detective, I believe, who's played by
one Casey Affleck.
Casey Affleck, yeah. Academy Award winner. And
non-friend of the pod.
Not a friend of the pod.
If I'm being honest, I wish that he were a friend of the pod.
I wish that he were too. I've heard him on a pod, actually, with Marc Maron.
Yeah.
And he actually made Marc Maron very upset because in the middle of the podcast they were recording, his son, Casey Affleck's son, calls him. And Casey Affleck does that thing where he asks, do you mind if I take this?
Yeah.
Marc Maron definitely minds, by the way. And but at that point, he's not really asking permission. He's just telling him he's answering the phone. And his son couldn't find his shoes.
Right.
Puts him on speakerphone, by the way, so we'll hear the whole conversation on the pod.
That's great.
And he helps his son find his shoes, and then they resume recording. And the rest of the time, Marc Maron was just disgruntled and upset.
Oh, yeah.
And it was hilarious.
Yes.
I'd like to think he was trolling. But you know what?
I hope he was, because if you're going to troll one podcast host, sanctimonious podcast host, and most of them are, to be quite honest.
Us especially.
I mean, why do you think we didn't take that phone call from Logan?
We literally refused. We're too professional.
Exactly. We hold the podcast totally. You're going to do it to Marc Maron, because he's just famously a jerk.
Oh, yeah. And Casey, if you're listening, which you are, if you come on the pod, you can answer as many phone calls as you want.
Do.
You can text. You can browse. We don't mind at all. Just show up. That's all we're asking. Yes, just show up.
We'll throw you softballs.
Bring your brother.
His appearance at the World Series with Kimmel and Matt Damon really turned me off to him.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
You don't show
and
up.
Also,
This
is a little known fact. If you come on the Brave Little Podcast, you must get drunk. Like, that's a requirement.
Yes.
So he's kind of disqualified.
Oh, sure. Because
he's not drinking any longer.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. Anyway, I'm just kidding. We're here with our Dasani water and the Mountain Dew,
the
sponsor of this pod. So, Aaron, Robert Redford.
Yeah. One of the all-time greats.
One of the all-time, absolutely. Royalty, right? I mean, this guy is one of the all-time great actors.
Yeah.
But for you, what is the best Robert Redford film? When you think of Robert Redford, it's like, all right, what's the Robert Redford film? What's the top?
It goes without saying, it's pretty obvious. It's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. I am not a big Western fan, but this movie is so good that it's probably in my top 30 or 40 movies of all time. And it's based solely on the chemistry between Robert Redford and Paul Newman, obviously. Paul Newman.
Second banana, Paul Newman.
he kind of is second banana in the movie. I think Paul Newman's one of the greatest of all time. Probably my most the actor that I like to watch the most.
Yeah, great dressing, salad dressing too. Yeah,
the best.
Yeah, so
the Caesar is incredible.
Yeah.
So, but the chemistry in this movie that they have together is magic.
Yeah.
They did it in The Sting as well. Mm-hmm. But for me, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid is like, it's the better movie of the two. I love The Sting. It's great.
No.
But yeah, as far as Western go, it's my favorite Western. It's so much fun, and it's a really accessible movie. Like, you can watch it now, and it does have the old-timey pace to it, but I think it's a great movie now, and I think it's the best movie he's ever done. So I put Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid as number one.
No question. So it's the best.
Yeah.
Is Paul Newman or Robert Redford the bigger star?
Oh, man.
And then follow-up question is which is the better actor?
Well, the better actor is Paul Newman by far.
Oh.
Yeah. But I think... bigger star is probably Robert Redford.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
They're both huge, of
course. And I think if you ask that question back in the 70s when they made the movie, it's probably Paul Newman because he was like famously a playboy. He was racing cars. He was he was like this gigantic monolith. But Robert Redford went on to have like a giant career in the 80s as well as the 90s, like the early part of the 90s. And then, of course... creating Sundance Film Festival, that made his star even brighter.
Oh, yeah.
And then now here he is, a living legend. So, yeah.
So, for me, other Robert Redford highlights along the way, and to be honest, there's a lot in the early career of Robert Redford that are considered classics, but I have not seen.
Yeah.
So, just remember that's the caveat here. But Sneakers?
Yeah.
Love that movie.
It's a great
movie. Grew up watching that movie. Love that movie. And more recently, maybe I need to revisit it because this is when I was in high school and I hadn't really formed my elitist film opinions yet. But I really like this movie called The Last Castle.
Okay.
And he plays this like war general that kind of makes a decision with his troops that essentially got them killed or a lot of them killed. And he's held responsible in military court for this. And probably rightfully so. But he gets sent to this military prison. Which is like shocking because he's like this 4-star general, like this huge celebrity in the different branches of the military. And he basically discovers that like everyone's being mistreated terribly by this warden played by the late James Gandolfini, the late and great James Gandolfini.
He was awesome in that movie.
Oh, terrific.
He was great in that movie.
Basically the movie is this, I mean, I don't know how realistic something like this is, but I remember thinking it was the coolest thing as a high schooler, but he basically leads this uprising to take over and kind of overtake the prison guards and the warden. I mean, no spoilers, but that's the crux of the movie,
is coming
to that realization and hatching that plan, but it's kind of underrated.
It is. I think it's a movie that's not appreciated. It had a decent life on video, on home video.
Oh, did it?
Oh. That's where I saw it. And I do
Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo, exactly.
Yeah,
that's early in his film career. But yeah, it's a really good movie, and it's a good choice actually. A nice deep cut in Robert Redford's later career.
The critics did not like that movie as much as I did.
They really didn't. Yeah.
What other Redford films do you like?
Immediately the pops to mind. Of course, it's The Natural.
The Natural.
I brought up The Sting.
Of course.
Those are movies that. Stylistically, they're older, and it might not be as accessible for younger people. But I think if you have an appreciation for film, you owe it to yourself to go back and watch those, because that's the height of Robert Redford's power. He was incredibly popular at the time. He was beyond a movie star, super charismatic, and it's really on display in movies like Natural and The Sting for sure.
So, yeah, can I tell you a story about The Natural?
Please do.
In a previous pod, I mentioned to you that my father. We'll watch a film. It doesn't matter how much of a masterpiece it is, but if there's kind of one element or something that really bothers him about it, then the whole movie is garbage.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for him to let certain things go. But this one was more about the trailer to The Natural.
Oh, wow.
But apparently, and this is spoiler alert if you haven't seen The Natural, but there's a big moment towards the end that involves hitting a home run that hits the lights, and the lights go out at the stadium. Well, apparently that was in the trailer for The Natural leading up to it. And my dad is a huge baseball fan, huge Robert Redford fan, Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid is his favorite film of all time. Loves it. So, anyway, he goes in to see The Natural, having seen that trailer, and it bothered him as the movie went along. And he's like, he hasn't hit the home run where the lights go out yet. When's that going to happen? And it builds up to this final climactic moment. He's like, no, of course he's going to hit a home run here and the lights go out. And then he does, you know, and he's like, oh, it's already ruined. I already knew the ending. And so he's told me this story. Now, I didn't watch The Natural till, like, you know, my high school, later teens, or, you know. And I remember watching it. I'm at home, you know, somewhere in the beginning of the film. My dad walks in the room. And he's like, is that The Natural? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, has he hit that home run yet where the lights go out? And I was like, no. And he's like, oh, yeah, I think that's towards the end of the movie. It's like it's the big scene where they win it all or something like that. And then he exits the room. I was like, ah, dope. All right, well, I'm not watching The Natural anymore.
I love that.
I turned it off. I revisited it later, and it's a great film. But
It's really good, yeah. Especially if you're a baseball fan. Totally. I think that movie speaks to you.
Yeah.
But yeah, Robert Redford, his career is incredible.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's honestly pretty disappointing that he's retiring, period. But he's a man of advanced age. He has a long film career, long history behind it, with so many notable works. All the President's Men, even. I mean, that's really regrown in popularity.
I just watched it two days ago. I rewatched it. Oh, it's so good. He's so good.
He's incredible. And I think, you know, bringing it back to this movie, Old Man and the Gun, you would think an actor of his advanced age, maybe he still doesn't have that ability to really bring home a performance.
Yeah.
And then you watch this movie, Old Man and the Gun, and there's points in this movie when I ask myself, is this the greatest performance of his career? Because he is on fire for this entire movie. It's unbelievable how good he is in Old Man and the Gun. It's astonishing. I don't think he's going to get nominated for an Academy Award, but he deserves it. I've seen so many movies this year. His performance is it's one of the top three performances of the year.
It is outstanding.
Yeah.
It's a top three Robert Redford performance of all time.
Hard to believe, but it's true.
How many people have their best performance at age 82?
Right.
By the way, he's acting at 82. I don't even want to live to 82, let alone be acting in movies, which is like a laborious effort.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be on a movie set. Are you kidding me?
And he's almost in every scene in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's Robert Redford time.
You bring up a good point because, you know, it's his swan song.
Yes.
But he puts it all out and he acts like it. I mean, I think this effort we're seeing from him is because he knows it's like leaving it all out in the field type of thing. It's like, I'm giving my all. But it also made me feel like, no, you still have stuff to contribute. Don't stop.
There's gas in the tank.
If you're this good, keep going. You got more left in you. But I think part of it was because he knew it was the end, and he really just,
There's a distinct parallel to the Roy Hobbs in The Natural.
That's right.
This movie is hitting the ball into the lights with his last at bat.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible.
Well, as soon as the credits rolled, the lights in the theater, it was like the home run lights,
They really should have done that.
Oh, my God.
Running the credits.
Well, this isn't a spoiler, but I will say there is a scene at the end of the film.
Yeah.
Casey Affleck's character puts his finger on his nose, ambiguous or subtle nod to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
That's right.
He gives that. I mean, there's a lot in here that is paying tribute to Robert Redford. Now, in the hands of a lesser director, this could have been bad.
Right.
Okay, because I don't know how much David Lowery claims he had no idea. Well, I guess he didn't know when he was writing the script and pre-production, et cetera, that this was going to be his last film. Apparently, he said that. As they were starting production, which made him a lot more nervous.
Oh, okay.
But the tribute feel of it, because this absolutely feels like a Robert Redford tribute, but in the best ways.
Mm-hmm.
The script was written, so I mean, this movie was already going to be what it was going to be. But anyway, this feels like the most Robert Redford-y film that you could even imagine, not just because it gives him these moments to shine and do Robert Redford things, but also Lowery creates this aesthetic that makes it feel like a film that was made in the late 70s.
Yeah.
Like this aesthetic that makes it feel like an old movie.
Beyond the great Robert Redford performance, this movie feels authentically like 1975, 1977.
Yep.
It feels like you could slide it into Robert Redford's old resume.
Absolutely.
And it fits perfectly.
Yes.
From the performance on down to the look, everything feels authentic about it.
Yep.
You can absolutely see that Lowery was a student of those old 70s films, or like 70s, early 80s films, and he understands the pacing, he understands the look, how they frame shots. All that is different now. And so this is why a lot of people have trouble going back to watch those old movies, because we're trained as viewers, especially as we're younger, the younger fans of our audience, to watch a movie a certain way, to enjoy it a certain way, and that's like the subtlety of edits That's the subtlety of picture framing. That's the subtlety of forming a story, even dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
Lowry channels a 1970s director. And for this entire movie itself, he's created a movie that belongs in the past. And it's amazing to watch. And it's jarring.
Yeah.
And it feels like 1970s yes. without feeling cheesy. At no point does Never. It feel like we're watching these people play dress up sitting in 1970s cars. And that's one of the things that is so astounding about this movie.
It's not gimmicky. Mm-mm. It's because people have tried this before. Make a modern movie feel like a movie filmed in a bygone era.
Yeah.
But for what was important here is not only did it not feel gimmicky, but it actually made me feel like I wished movies were still made like this.
Yeah.
That stories were still told like this, and that they still looked like this, had right. the pacing like this.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was a choice to match the Robert, if you match that to Robert Redford, or just this the actual timeline of the story, or whatever it may have been. But he just nails the look, the feel, and the way he lets the film breathe. So there's this scene early on where Robert Redford, his character, Tucker. Forrest Tucker.
Yeah.
Meets Sissy SpaceX character, who is she, by the way. If we're talking about Robert Redford being
yeah.
great,
yeah.
you could make the case that she's the best performance in this film.
You could easily make that case. You have two performances here that are home runs. She's incredible.
Like,
as opposite him. It's really hard. I mean, she deserves so much praise because we see it all the time, how hard it is to match the performance of someone that's so dominant in
yes,
a movie.
Yes,
she has a smaller part, but every scene that she's in, she's amazing.
Yeah,
she's nailing every scene that she's in, and she pulls out a character that might be maybe I wouldn't say underwritten, but it's a stereotypical character. It's the love interest, with some backstory, but her performance is so nuanced.
Oh,
it's so. But crafted,
yeah,
and it's amazing.
Yeah,
and it feels so full. It feels so vibrant, and she just does an amazing job.
Oh, it's incredible.
She's the equivalent to Robert Redford in every scene that she's in with him.
No doubt about it.
Yeah,
toe to toe. I mean,
he doesn't dominate her in any sequence that they're in together. So,
and he's playing this kind of playing this coy kind of like sly. He's flirting with her
yes,
in this opening scene especially that I'm talking about, where she's still trying to figure him out and she's kind of skeptical about like what's this guy's deal. You can tell she doesn't believe most of what he's saying,
mm-hmm.
but she's like clearly drawn to him.
Yeah.
But yet she's not going, she's not just going to fall for him and just, allow herself to be vulnerable and to be taken advantage of by some, con man.
Stranger.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just a lot, what she does with her eyes, her facial, it's incredible acting
yes.
work.
Yeah.
So in this first scene in this diner, after his character helps her change a tire or something mm-hmm. like that, which is actually a really clever scene,
yeah.
They're having this conversation. The dialogue itself, like it's not like Quentin Tarantino dialogue where it's just jam-packed. But there's something naturalistic about it, but also kind of quick as they're cutting back and forth,
yeah.
where I was like weirdly on the edge of my seat.
Yes.
Not that it's tense, but there's this electricity between these two characters and actors as they're talking. And clearly he's trying to woo her.
Mm-hmm.
This is an 80-year-old man,
yeah.
Wooing another older woman that's, you're not used to that type of energy between a couple people that are in their senior years.
We don't see that. We're not allowed to see that in film.
No.
Because once, the way that the film industry works, you age out.
That's right.
You cannot be considered sexual.
That's right.
Being past a certain age in film.
Yes.
This movie throws that on its head.
Completely.
You have two older individuals that are single.
Yep.
And they're flirtatious and they're really playful together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to watch. It's really cool to watch. And I love that sequence.
Well, there's this magnetism.
Yeah.
Where they're going back and forth, toe to toe, flirting, not unlike two 18-year-olds would,
Right.
And she's like, she asks him a question. He goes, "No, that's not my style." She's like, "Oh, you got style?" He's like, "I got style." and he's got this smile on it,
I'm
just like, "Oh my gosh, he's still got it. She's still got it." Like it's just incredible. And Lowry, who has this sense of presence in this moment, and it was written for this purpose, right? But they are. Clearly, he realized that they were just knocking out of the park
mm-hmm.
With his dialogue. But he takes the camera in the scene in this booth at the diner where they're going toe-to-toe. And he does this interesting thing where he veers the camera away a little bit.
Yeah.
And they're still talking, but it just kind of oddly kind of pans away, not to anything in particular that's happening that, you know, the,
right.
he's not trying to catch the viewer's eye necessarily. It feels at first kind of not jarring, but like weird, like out of place.
Yeah.
But what it dawned on me as it's happening is that you see the rest of the booths in the diner and they're all young kids, like either in college aged or late high school.
Yeah.
Like a lot of it's a boy and a girl or just a, and they're all being flirtatious. It's all young love.
Yes.
And he's drawing this parallel of like, oh, this is the exact same thing that's happening with these young kids at the diner that are all doing, this is the same thing that's happening, right? Yeah. Between these two. And it was kind of this interesting moment that I was like, oh, this is.
It's probably my favorite scene in the movie and it comes early and I love it. And it's like, it just made me think of, you know, like when you're first dating someone, I'm sure when you first started dating your wife, and you have those like one or two dates where you just feel like you're on.
Oh, yeah.
Like the conversation between you two is flowing.
Yeah.
And it's like you feel like, okay, this is the best me.
Yeah.
I'm on fire right now.
Yeah.
I'm so quick. I'm wooing her. And, you know, it leads to other stuff. And eventually, you know, you have this connection between you two. And it's like that first spark, really. And it made me like rethink my own life with my own wife. You know, when we were first starting to get to know each other, it's like you want to be on top of your game.
Oh, yeah.
And you want to be like cool and suave and like make those connections to get them interested in you. And the way that they capture this scene, it's perfect.
Oh, it's so good.
It's really, really good. It's magic. And that's what I loved about this movie. You talked about Robert Redford's his ability to be so charismatic. We haven't seen that in a movie in so long.
Nope, not like this.
He's getting a chance to shine, and he's got it in spades, man. You see what a movie star is in this movie. It's great.
But that's the thing is, like, I don't know, maybe I haven't watched a ton of recent Robert Redford films, but he hasn't been like this.
He hasn't had a chance to.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just not the opportunity, the role.
Or maybe he didn't want to.
Maybe. I don't know. Or just maybe he was tired. Maybe this is him giving it all. But it is Robert Redford in his prime.
Yes.
It's a peak Robert Redford. And it's not just with Sissy Spacek.
No.
His character is this guy who's robbing banks, but is also a gentleman, right? Like, he's polite and very charming, and he, with the, you know, bank tellers of which he walks in and essentially tells them he has a gun and yada yada, you know, how bank robberies go.
Right.
But in the meantime, he's super polite and kind and compliments, and you know, that's a theme to this movie is this guy's like just a generally good, seems like happy. Now, a bank robber, of course, it's not a good
committing
person.
Committing a crime.
A crime.
Yeah.
And he, to be fair, he is lying along the way to even Sissy Spacek, this character who he doesn't even tell his real name at first. So this isn't a good person, per se. But he's not like this monster, you know, this evil monster that's, you know.
That's necessarily physically dangerous at all.
Right.
He supposedly has a gun. We don't know. I mean,
yeah.
Does he have a gun or not?
So that's what's interesting is in the so this is based off of this this journalist that did a series of interviews with Tucker Forrest Tucker. I can't remember his name. That's the third time I can't. Yeah. Anyway, he did a series of interviews with him towards the end of his life while he was in prison, and he did this long form piece of journalism, and that's what this script is based off of. And it was unclear if he had a gun. And now I think he definitely did, but whether he ever fired it or actually showed it, brandished it, is kind of in question, right? I think he claims he never did.
And they make a point to reference that he was in a shootout with cops. Based off of a backfire of his car.
Right.
They thought that he was shooting his gun at him, but apparently they weren't. So
if
we're to believe that, then he never did fire his gun.
Yes.
But who knows? Who really knows? That's what I love about this movie is it just keeps you guessing.
Throughout. It does. Yeah. It feels a little bit also like a kind of like a fairy tale in a way. Almost
totally.
You wonder a little bit like, is this just kind of a myth story, like a story of a legend that's kind of a lot of this isn't true or is
part of the magic of the story. So.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure in the retelling of it in real life when he was talking to this journalist, I'm sure he was completely embellishing every aspect of his life. I mean, of course he was.
Yeah.
Now he's joined by the Over the Hill Gang, which is played by Danny Glover and Tom Waits.
Yes.
Excellent. They don't have a ton of screen time, but every scene they're in is terrific, including this scene with Tom Waits where he tells the story about why he hates Christmas is a highlight of the film.
Yeah.
One of the highlights of the film for me. It doesn't belong anywhere narratively, but it's hilarious.
It's very funny.
And I was listening, or I was reading some articles and listening to some like podcasts with David Lowery, and apparently that's Tom Waits telling stories. And that was a real story.
Awesome.
And he was just running the camera. He's just like, just keep telling these stories to Danny and to Bob, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And he just keeps going and going. And one of them was that one. And so he keeps it in the film, which is also incredible. And to your point about Robert Redford doing the, like, the charisma, the acting, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Another Lowry anecdote about working on the on set with him, which, by the way, I'm sure for Lowry had to have been intimidating.
Yeah.
Now, he'd already directed him in Pete's Dragon, but still.
Still a young filmmaker.
Still a young filmmaker. Yeah. And this is an absolute icon he's working with, right? A Hollywood royalty.
Yeah.
He said that they were doing a take of one scene, and it was like maybe the third or fourth take or whatever, and Lowry says, all right, but, you know, Robert, I want you to give me this, or he asks him for a very specific type of reaction or facial expression, and he says, I already gave that to you. You would know that if you were paying attention.
Oh.
But I'll do it again. And then they do it again, and Lowry said, like, it really kind of humbled him.
Yeah.
That day, he looked back at the dailies, and sure enough, in the first take, he gave him exactly that take. Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Just incredible.
I love that.
Yeah, incredible.
I love that.
So it was the very first take he did. But yeah, it's so good. I mean, yeah, Robert Redford, yeah, he knows what he's doing.
True legend.
Yeah. So there's one other, there's an element of the story I want to explore as well, and that's with Casey Affleck's character.
Sure.
Who plays this police detective who is chasing after, you know, Forrest. And
right.
So it's kind of become his obsession, but he also has this weird admiration for him and is kind of like, kind wants to catch him, but also kind of wants him to continue.
Right.
And there's this this kind of parallel life story that they're exploring here about, are you happy with what you're doing? What you've chosen to do with your life, are you making the most of it, and are you happy?
Right.
And is that okay? Is that justify the decisions that you make?
Yeah.
I found this pretty compelling. Now, no one would describe this film as like super deep.
Yeah.
And in fact, a lot of the critics talk about it as being breezy, almost like a kind of a walk, and because the pace is a little bit slower.
Sure.
I disagree with that characterization of the film.
Yeah. I mean, but if you take it at face value, I can see why you would have that critique.
It's light.
But,
yeah,
man, if you just think about it for 5 minutes after you watched it, then you I don't know how you come to the conclusion that it isn't deep.
Yeah,
because it is.
It
explores so many themes beyond what we see play out in on the screen.
So what it is for you, what was that? What were the themes that you pulled out of it that were below surface level?
Right? Yeah, I think, really it boils down to... it's like it's something that we hear constantly. Do what you're passionate about, right?
Yes,
instead of just having a job.
That's right.
And the way that it plays out in this movie is Robert Redford's character, he loves to rob banks. That's just what it is.
Yeah.
He wants to be a bank robber.
That's right.
I'm not
talking about making a living. I'm talking about living.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's like he has a philosophy to it. So I can understand why Casey Affleck's character respected him.
Yes.
It's a cat and mouse game.
Yes.
But this is somebody that is great at what they do. That's the other thing. Robert Redford is great at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
He avoided... I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but we know that obviously the story already happened. It's true life, so you can go look it up and see how it plays out. And I'll just say, this is someone that left huge breadcrumbs on his trail unnecessarily.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, because it is a cat and mouse game.
Yes.
That's what it boils down to.
Yes.
Once Robert Redford found out that, once Forrest Tucker found out that John Hunt, I think the guy's name is, Casey's character, is looking and he's out for him, and that he cracked the case, he respects that.
Yes.
You see, there's specifically a scene where he...
I love the scene.
Where he finds out that there's a detective that is heading the program to capture him, and he cracked the code, essentially. And he reaches out to him.
Yes, he does. Yes.
He doesn't need to.
Probably shouldn't.
Of course, he absolutely shouldn't. But he does it because he respects what the detective is doing.
That's right.
He respects the passion, the pursuit. And you know, like, they're a mirror of each other, really.
Yep.
And that's the way the movie plays out. And I love that cat and mouse game that they play together. So, it's a great performance by Casey.
It is, though. It is.
He's most definitely not the star of this movie.
Nope.
He has a smaller part, but again, he's great in it.
That's so good.
The pairing with Lowry is, I mean, those two work so well together. It's magic. I love it. So.
Yeah, the thing about Casey Affleck, it'd be easy to look at this performance at face value and think like, oh, it's just Casey kind of playing downtrodden, depressed Casey. Mm-hmm. We've seen him do that in Manchester by the Sea and other movies.
Yes.
Like, no, that's not what he's doing. There's a lot more.
Yeah.
One scene in particular where... I thought was he did a particularly good job of acting. He's heading up this case to chase after Robert Redford's character. But eventually, in a lot of these films like this, the feds come in to take over the case.
Right.
And of course, he's like, doesn't want to give it up. It's his passion. And And he's explaining, you know, he's in the car with his kids after the scene where he finds out, you know, and his mm-hmm. his young daughter's asking him, you know, if they do the same job you do, how come they don't let you keep doing it? And he's like, because they think they can do it better. And she's like, well, can they? And he says, probably. And it's like this, oh my gosh. Like, oh.
Becomes a realization that.
Yeah. They have more resources. Yeah, it's kind of, you know.
Yeah, his hands were tied.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's what we come to find out in the early stages of the investigation. His hands are tied. Yeah. So.
Well, I do want to talk one more scene. We do have to wrap up here. As I mentioned, it is your birthday. And your NFL team, the Dallas Cowboys, are playing tonight.
Playing the Philadelphia Eagles.
So we got to get you on a flight out to the Cowboys Stadium.
To go.
So.
Yeah.
No, we want to actually.
I'm boarding in 10, so yeah, let's wrap it up here.
Yeah, yeah. You got your Southwest boarding numbers at A1, so we got.
I'm actually section Z, 38, so I'm going to be waiting a while.
I do want you to think about what you'd rate the film on, you know, on the Rotten Tomatoes scale from 0 to 100, and while you're thinking about that. One more scene for me that was definitely my highlight, my number one, just the best scene of the film for me. No dialogue. It is the scene where it's all played over a song called Blues Run the Game, and a song I wasn't familiar with before this movie. It was incredible in this moment. And I don't want to talk about the events leading up to it because it's too much of a spoiler, but he does get on a horse and he's riding as during this kind of sunrise. It's late in the night as the scene starts. But as he gets on this horse and he's riding kind of on this farm, the sun is coming up and he's got this blanket around him and he looks into the distance and he sees kind of what's coming at him. And there's this moment of just kind of serene, like tranquility and peace as the song is playing and you see Robert Redford's face and he's on this horse and I'm like, wow, this is it, right? This is Robert Redford's last film and he just gave maybe his best performance. Yeah. It's an incredible scene. Like the first time I watched it, like I was almost getting teary-eyed because it was like, it was a goodbye. It was like, wow, yeah, you've had a hell of a career. Yeah.
The movie is incredibly emotional. It's an emotional ride, and I think those are the best movies for me when you feel an attachment to these characters that you didn't know anything about 5 minutes before the movie started.
Yeah.
And the journey, the story, the performances, everything about it is just, it makes you care so much. And then you bring other stuff into it, and it can be overpowering. So, I mean, I got to commend David Lowery,
absolutely.
Robert Redford, Sissy Spacek, Casey Affleck, everyone involved.
Yeah,
top
excellent.
Of the game.
Excellent. I would say more about Lowery, but we will save that for our follow-up where we actually talk to him.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem like the type of guy who would love us to heap praises on him. No. He seems very humble, yeah. But that will not stop us. but I'll just say this. That man knows how to make a movie.
Yeah.
So, I'm mad because that is a movie. So, go see Old Man and the Gun. Yep. What do you rate it on the scale from?
Thinking about the Rotten Tomatoes scale, it's definitely in the 90s
yeah,
for me.
It is.
Probably 93 is where I put it.
Yeah.
It's an A movie for sure. I would recommend it to anybody.
Absolutely.
Give it time. Like, be patient with it because it feels different.
Take your parents, maybe.
exactly. Yeah. Take anyone that has experience watching older movies because they're going to feel... right at home in this
absolutely.
Setting. But yeah, just be patient with it. It pays off, and I think it's a very good movie. It's one of my favorite movies of the year. So
me too, absolutely.
Great job, everyone involved.
Well, we'll be back later tonight. We're going to talk Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, yeah.
Celebrate his birthday.
Another birthday boy.
Yep. the secondary birthday boy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, secondary. Sure. You've got a greater body of work for sure. But we'll be back. Just go, everyone, go see Old Man and the Gun.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.